this is us learning in public, trying to...
Literally learning in public.
Yeah.
We were at Vancouver Public Library. Yes. There are glass doors. Yes. We were literally learning in public.
Pulling back the curtain of silence.
And learning what freedom feels like. I'm Nick.
And I'm Lala. This is Scene. Brown-eyed activism.
Healing at the intersections.
There's Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, and countless other apps that connect us to each other, our families, and people across the planet. I think in like the last 10 to 15 years, social media has really like exploded and has facilitated the ability for us to like make relationships, share information, and honestly do a buck ton more. But basically, it's been this great tool to support and truly televise the revolution in many places. Social media has done a lot for us. And I'd like to take some time today to just talk our way through the benefits of social media, some of the critiques that I have of social media, because I think we're approaching the conversation from different vantage points. And I think I'm interested in knowing more about what you think. So yeah, as usual, I kind of just want to start with a check-in.
Okay.
How are you approaching this conversation? And I think my question is really, you love social media.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious whether or not your level of tolerance in having like that age-old conversation of like in the defense of social media, like, are you sick of it? Are you ready for folks to just be like, social media exists, let's stop fucking criticizing it? Because no. I know that like even when we started talking about this conversation, it was like you were kind of like, there are plenty of benefits and like fuck all y'all.
A little bit. No, I'm not sick of talking about it. I want to talk about it because I think there are a lot of critiques, and I feel like we have gotten to a point where the sort of default is to critique.
Yeah.
Even as we're all a little addicted to it, yes. We also default to critiquing it. And I think there is critiques that are very fair. And I think they are important to talk about. And to the extent that people experience it in any kind of negative way, I think it's really important to talk about it. But I also want to be a voice for advocating what's good about social media, because I've experienced it as a huge amount of good in my life.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's excellent. And I expected nothing less, to be honest. Good. Yeah, I think I kind of have like a mixed relationship with social media. It's both positive and negative. I think the negative comes from a place of being critical about how individual users perhaps use the platforms.
Yeah.
Because that's most of my angst about social media is like people and what they are putting out there.
It's very
but
fair.
Then, you know, even I'm sure people will be like, I hate what you post, Nicole. And it's like, you know, yeah. That's fine. Yeah. You know, it's not for everybody. I'm not for everybody. But then the positive points about social media, I think, come from my appreciation of the ways that it supports collective community and group interests,
yes.
Like making things visible. I'm curious, what was the first application or social media you used, and how has your experience in social media changed over the years? Like, track it for me.
Yeah, so some people I knew had MySpace in high school. I did not. Mm-hmm. I got Facebook in my first semester of university. That was still when Facebook was only for university students.
That's so funny. I got Facebook when I was in the eighth grade.
All right. The age difference
showing
really
the age
big.
Difference. No, we're oh like, God. What, we're 4 years apart?
Yeah.
I think we're like 4 years apart. You're born in 88?
87.
Okay, never mind. We 5 years
all
apart.
All right, look, let's move on. So for the first couple years I was on Facebook. Wow, I'm really aging myself. For the first couple years I was on Facebook, it was only university students. And it was, I think, the only social media. I mean, that I
like
knew
you couldn't actually,
I guess MySpace still existed.
So you actually couldn't get on Facebook if you weren't
you had. You needed to have a university or college email address.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
What the fuck?
Back in the old days.
AOL.com days.
All it. Right. Anyways. And
so you used it for
And I got obsessed with it. Like, I used it all the time. It very quickly became the centerpiece of my internet usage. Mm-hmm. Twitter came along a few years later. I didn't really get into it. I wish I had. I didn't get Instagram until, like,
so
I don't know,
recently?
2014. 2015.
Yeah,
it was quite very recent.
Yeah.
Now I'm most into Twitter and also Instagram, and Facebook I think is like a ghost town. Like nobody goes on Facebook anymore.
Nobody in our like cohort or people that we spend time with are on Facebook. Now they have all these you can buy and sell stuff. People use Facebook for like groups, I think.
Yeah, that's like the one good thing about Facebook.
Yeah, I think when I first started using social media. It was definitely Facebook. It was like incessant. And then I started to weed myself off of it, and I don't use it as much at all anymore. And then I was pretty hands off of like Snapchat. I was always just like, what the fuck am I gonna post? And same thing with Instagram. I never posted anything really, or I just didn't know if things were like cool enough to.
Yeah.
Because I was just like, and now I use it so much more. One thing that I noticed in myself, which has to do with one of the issues that I have with social media, is the sense of dependence that I started to get, especially when it came to Facebook, because Facebook allows you to like post things at length, and unfortunately/fortunately, depending on who's in your circle and who you're like your friends on Facebook, people can just comment at length, and you kind of it made me feel like there was an obligation to respond and continue to have conversations that were not meaningless but like fruitless with people who genuinely had no desire to actually understand my points of view.
Oh yeah,
back that in, was yeah. yeah
back in the day I used to get in, like I was heavily into the Facebook debates and definitely had a lot of very fight or flight, like
yeah
frenzied debates with people that I didn't even know.
And the word is frenzied because it feels then that's I think one of my beefs with social media in general is like this need for it, almost a compulsion that it becomes, in the sense that, for example, like when I'm having this like beef with a person on Facebook, or back in the day when I would actually engage in more disputes with people, I always kind of felt like I couldn't just log off, otherwise like somebody else was winning. And it's like, I don't know if it was like a healthy thing for me. Over time, when I've started to track how it's actually made me feel, if I'm noticing that I must get on it or I have to stay on it to like finish something, finish what I've started with somebody and not let somebody, I'm just tied to it. So I've tried to like be a little bit more or a lot more mindful about when it's exhausting the shit out of me.
Yeah. That sounds like a healthy thing but
I'm,
to do.
I'm wondering for you, like, maybe you just have a lot more self-control than I do, or maybe it hasn't been as problematic for you, like this compulsion to use social media. Because for me, I've had to be really conscientious about how much time I'm spending on social media. Is that something that you ever struggle with or even are concerned with at all?
Yeah, well, I used to, back in the day, a big part of how I developed my politics was I was involved in groups on Facebook that were about that. And so there was years where those kinds of frenzied debates with strangers were a huge part of my life.
Yeah.
I probably should have tried to be more mindful of how it was affecting me. I was so in it at the time that I didn't try to temper it in any way. I felt like it was so important.
Yeah.
Because the conversations are so important. Right. And so how can you walk away?
Totally.
More recently, in more recent years, I don't know why I don't. I just don't bother to get into it with strangers.
Yeah. I think I'm starting to get to that. But it's true though, because I guess for me it got overwhelming, or it's gotten overwhelming to the point where there's like so many different platforms and so many different things that I feel like I need to be dialed into. And I think I had a very different relationship than you did, whereas like you had Facebook, let's say, as a space where you could go and refine your politics. I think I've been able to get that from Facebook in many ways, but mostly it was like being within the same microcosm echo chamber of like people who quote unquote believe the same things that I did, which is like going to Christian school. So only kind of getting information from those same kinds of voices. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel free enough to even really, I didn't even really know how to explore Facebook for the purposes of expanding my politics. Because at that time, when I was like 13, 14, 15, 16, I didn't even see that as a need. Like it wasn't something that resonated with me or anything. And I think it's been in my adult life where I've been like, how do I go and search this up? Or how do I go and find different perspectives or different kinds of voices that would at least make sure that I knew that I wasn't the only person experiencing something?
Yeah.
Like with the knowledge of my perspective being valid now in my adult life, I'm able to go and do that. But I think way back when I was in high school, I didn't even think that my perspective was valid, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I think, a huge beauty of social media, because I didn't think my perspective was valid in high school either.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like if I had had access to things like Facebook and even Reddit, I mean, for all of its downfalls, there's a lot of people
Reddit,
there.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Yeah, and Twitter and all of these places, Instagram, where there is a diversity of voices. If I had been able to see that there were people like me in the world, I think that would have really changed what I could have imagined for myself in high school, because I really couldn't imagine anything for myself at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. Where I've started to be, well, I'm a critical person, so let's not say that I've just started to, but I am very critical of noticing when I'm like mindlessly scrolling to collect information. Yeah. It's almost like you're like mining for something, but you don't know what you're looking for. You're just like endless refresh, like endless consumption of stuff. And sometimes I realize I'll be on social media for like an hour straight and I'm like, what did I actually see today? Like sometimes for me, I have to be going on the app with an intention. Otherwise, I'm just like spending my time there.
Yeah. And it's so hard not to, because I think it's the combination of endless new content and the dopamine rushes that we get from getting random notifications. I've turned off all my push notifications for social media to fight that.
Same when here,
when I first started tracking screen time and saw how many actual hours
you spent. Like, what the?
It was shocking. Yeah, and so I did want to change my relationship, and a big part of it was getting rid of the push notification so I wasn't getting those bursts of dopamine that were making me feel so addicted.
Yeah. No, totally. Another piece of social media that, and I'm not sure how much this grates you or makes you feel or think about this, but I have been of the belief that with all these like filters and like self-promotion, it becomes really difficult to know what's real and what's not real when it comes to people's individual like representations of themselves. The authenticity that could or couldn't exist on social media, or can or can't exist on social media, is another thing that I am curious about. I think it's a problem that can exist with people in real life, like somebody showing you only a part of who they are. But I think social media is certainly the place where it's really easy for a person to show only a part of who they actually are, because it's self-curated, right? Social media facilitates people being able to hide different parts of themselves. Because even for me, when I'm posting things, I'm so aware of like whether or not I am presenting myself in my fullness, or like presenting an accurate depiction of who I am as opposed to how I want other people to see me.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever felt that same pressure for yourself, or curiosity about how you can show up as your authentic self on social media?
Yes. It's been tough to figure out how I want to share on social media, what mm-hmm. feels good and what's authentic.
Yeah.
I guess I feel like it's what you said, though, that it's the same as in real life. Social media facilitates people to create, you know, more of a facade, for sure. The Bow Wow Challenge effect, right?
Oh my God, I love it. So embarrassing.
Yes. But I don't know. I think that when somebody is sharing in a way that feels resonant or authentic, I think you find that. And I think you can curate who you follow. If there's people you're following where it feels fake or it's making you feel bad about yourself because you're having to live up to this mm-hmm. unreal standard, mm-hmm. there is the option to unfollow.
Yeah, it's not like you have to be passively consuming things and people are like shoving things in your face necessarily. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, and I do that in life too. Like there's people that I meet that make me feel bad about myself or just are putting on an act, you know, or don't want to get real. So I spend less time with those people. And there's people that I meet that feel more authentic. I want to invest more energy in them. And I feel the same way about people on social media. So I don't know. It gets chucked up to social media a lot, but I'm not sure
if that's
how
like
much
a fair
that even has to do with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's more, it becomes problematic when the person that is portrayed, like let's say a person that I actually know. It's different when you have no relationship with a person off of the social media.
Yeah.
So you're able to gauge, you know, you're not able to gauge what they're presenting themselves to be like and then what they actually are. But this Jekyll Hyde sort of thing where a person might be detached from people around them, but then on social media, I have all these people, I have all these friends, I have all this money, I have all this stuff. I mean, do what you want to do. At the end of the day, that's only hurting yourself, I think. But kind of back more to your point, there is always the option for us to like have autonomy and a sense of, well, I don't want to consume that, or I don't want to like participate in gassing a person up when I know that they are not that way in real life. You know what I mean? Like if you can read through it, then you have the ability to just say, well, I opt out of that.
You can unfollow somebody without them knowing.
Because
mm-hmm.
that's
a really
that's
good
true.
Way to handle when there's somebody in your life who posts on social media in a way that you find really problematic for whatever reason.
Yeah.
That you don't necessarily want to cause a conflict.
Yeah. You can mute things.
Yeah.
And then,
I have.
Yeah.
I have done that. Yeah.
I think I muted and then I started to realize, like, am I missing this person's content? And then muting became like a segue into just unfollowing somebody.
Yeah, it can be. Or sometimes there's people in your life that maybe you do value them, but for whatever reason, their posting is upsetting to you. Like, it can be triggering, or it just doesn't make you feel good. And maybe you're like, well, I do like this person. I do want to, you know, maintain the friendship, the connection, but I don't want to see this because it just upsets me and it's not good for our relationship.
Yeah.
And I think it's really nice to have that option, the same way that you have the option to, you know, choose how often you see a person or what intensity you see them, or do you invite them to your home or not. You know, it's like another way to have a boundary, but still be able to maintain a relationship.
Yeah, that's very fair. Hey everyone, it's Nick.
And Lala.
If you've been listening to Scene and you like what you hear,
please share us with your friends.
Subscribe to the podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at Scene the Podcast.
Write a review and just tell us what you think.
And help make this work sustainable by supporting Scene the Podcast on Patreon.
We need our beautiful community and we cannot do this without you. As social media is accessible to nearly anyone and everyone, give or take people in certain countries where there's like media bans and you can't access that as a platform, social media in many ways facilitates our ability to like find other people who are like-minded, like interested in social justice and stuff. But at the same time, social media also facilitates bigoted and hateful people to find their communities as well. Yeah. And I found, and I know that you're aware of this, that some particular applications like Twitter and Instagram actually have a really poor track record, when it comes to actually holding hateful account holders accountable. There's this account on Instagram. I think they're also on Twitter. No Wait Saviors.
Yeah.
No Wait Saviors. They've received countless warnings from Instagram for being outside of their community policies, for example, for talking about the the stealing of little African children from their homes, knowing that they are not orphans, so that they can become adopted by some white woman in Tennessee or something like that. And I've seen the same kind of response on Twitter, where there's certain accounts that'll perpetuate and push out really fucked up things. And then it's the people who are saying that's not okay, and maybe saying quote unquote inflammatory things back to those bigoted account holders, who are the ones who are penalized. And I think the issue really is just the fact that these platforms like Twitter and Instagram, at the end of the day, they are run by people.
Yes.
And it's people's narrow interpretations, poor politics in and of themselves that are responsible for those kinds of responses back to No White Saviors for doing the work that they're doing, which is incredible, very important work.
Yes, exactly. And that's why, absolutely, we're going to see the same social problems on these platforms that
we do in
the world, because they're designed by people and they're run by people.
Right.
So the same biases are going to show up there as everywhere. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. And then, you know, the issues of surveillance, just because we all use social media so much and put so much information about ourselves, our whereabouts, our children, where we go, where we eat, literally tracking our day-to-day movements. I'm aware that that is a risk that I'm taking when I'm putting my information out there.
Absolutely.
You hear these stories of, I think it was an individual who was flying from, I want to say somewhere in the Middle East into the States to go to Harvard. And upon landing, I wish I had the story in front of me, but do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I read about
it.
It
was upon landing that he was taken into a separate room. His phone was confiscated. They were going through social media, and he was held responsible for posts that his friend, or a person that was on his friends list on Facebook in a group that he just happens to be part of, posted, and he was sent back to his home country.
And I think that those posts were just critical of the U.S. as
well.
It's not that they were violent, hateful, extremist posts.
Exactly.
It was just critical of the United States.
Exactly. Yeah. So I guess,
to my understanding.
Yeah, that's kind of my interpretation of that as well, which seems to check out, because I've had several friends of mine who would cross the border and say that a border guard would ask them questions about their Facebook posts or Facebook posts of other people that were not even identifying the U.S. as the country, but talking about sort of social justice things in a more meta sense. And that was enough grounds for them to either be given a stern warning about their social media and at least detained for umpteen hours before they were allowed to cross the border. So
that's the thing. I mean, governments, including here in Canada and other Western countries, governments are paying attention. They are surveilling. And of course, they're going to tap into this resource of social media where we voluntarily put so much out there. Mm-hmm. Of course they are. Yeah. They've always been paying attention. They've always been watching. Mm-hmm. And I think we do need to take that seriously. Sometimes people want to say that that's paranoid. It's not paranoid.
Yeah.
It's documented that that is happening, that has been happening, that's always going to happen.
Absolutely. You just mentioning that governments are watching is a really good segue into me talking about some of the positive parts about social media because So I ended up doing a little bit of research and I came across a post by the Pew Research Center. And it was just describing some of the awesome things about social media, one of them being that it is a vehicle to get, you know, elected officials' attentions on issues that affect their constituents. Mm-hmm. Because of things like hashtag Me Too or hashtag Black Lives Matter, for example. So on one hand, we know that we are being surveilled when we are using these platforms and engaging with these platforms. But then at the same time, we're able to hold our elected officials accountable or at least compel them in very clear ways to hold them accountable for things that are happening in our cities, in our countries, in our states, in our provinces.
It's an incredibly powerful organizing tool, one of the most powerful organizing tools that exists. And that's why we see it getting blacked out in places where the government wants to be able to.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like you can tell the government knows the power of the people by the way that it squashes people's ability to use tools like social media to tell their truth and tell their stories about what is actually happening on the ground.
Exactly.
So it really can be a tool for the resistance. And it's super interesting too, because I was in the same Pew Center article. It was talking about how social media is seen by 8 out of 10 Black. This is an American, unfortunately, this is an American website, but it was saying that 8 out of 10 Blacks believe that social media sheds light on rarely discussed issues. And this was interesting because the same proportion of white American social media users believe that social media detracts from more important issues, which is fascinating.
Yeah.
So it's like for...
Speaks volumes.
Right, exactly. So for those of us who are able to use social media to bring up conversations that we've never been able to have on a platform that gets elevated internationally, for example, for so many other people who are haters of our very existence, they see us having these conversations like the ones we're having on this podcast as frivolous, as being divisive, of bringing up things that don't really matter, as being distracting. And so then we know for a fact that when we have 8 out of 10 white Americans using social media saying those kinds of things, that what we are doing when we're using social media to do hashtag Me Too and hashtag Black Lives Matter really fucking matters.
Yeah, that's the thing. Social media, in a lot of ways, as much as there are algorithms and the way that it's run that perpetuate these existing inequalities, at the same time there is a leveling effect, right, where every voice does have the opportunity to get out there, and the voices that are resonating among a lot of people, maybe even in some cases the majority, but it's an oppressed majority or it's an oppressed minority, but there's enough connection made possible by social media that it gets elevated and actually gets brought to the majority's attention. Yeah. So that's what's so powerful about it. And that is why a lot of people, of course, are going to have a problem with it because they don't want a level playing field.
No, not at all. And then kind of to your point just now about how it elevates the conversation and allows us to kind of find our people. I know for you, you've been able to form, I was going to say like real relationships, but you've been able to form relationships with people who you continue to be friends with over the course of years through social media. Can you talk, can you talk a bit about that and what that experience has been like for you?
Yeah. Well, it started, like I said, in the early days of Facebook, and there were these discussion groups, and there was one in particular that I was really active in. And there were several people who were over the course of years. And I feel like we really went through a lot together in a way, because it was going through all of these big, intense processes mm-hmm. and these big, intense learnings. And close relationships developed. And some of those people I'm still close with. And
like
some,
years later.
More than a decade later.
Wow.
And
wow, that's wild.
Yeah. And it is where I've done so much learning. That's where I've connected with people that I wouldn't have had a chance to connect to in real life mm-hmm. and learn from them.
Yeah.
That's how I know Soraya, but it wasn't that
right.
who did the artwork. Yeah, the podcast who I've talked about on other episodes because yeah. I've learned so much from her. It's a very unique place.
Yes.
There's opportunities through social media that don't exist otherwise.
In other places. Totally. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting too because I remember very recently, up until maybe the past like year, I would harp on my partner a lot because a lot of his friends, like he would always just find people through like Instagram. He's like super outdoorsy, and so like all these hashtags for like beoutside.com, I don't fucking know, existed, and so a lot of his friends really I love it. I'm supportive of it now, but I think originally I was just like, can you be friends in real life? Like, and that was my critique, right? But it's fascinating because this year alone, so many people that I have spent time with, have started to build relationships with, have started to like consider organizing with and creating with, even have formed through social media, strictly through a quick couple of likes. And then you continue to like a person's yeah. post on something, and then you might like comment on something, and then you slide into the DM, and then it becomes more of a back and forth. And then you're like, let's just go for coffee in real life. And then it becomes a real time friendship,
yeah,
which I think is so cool. And I'm saying this as a convert. I used to be really critical of what the potential was for meeting people on social media, but now I see it as one of the most inevitable ways for you to find people for you.
Yeah, well, and especially then because like people like your partner, who's very introverted, mm-hmm. who likes doing things that are very like solitary type of activities, or activities where you're actually going to run into people.
Yeah.
That's a chance to connect that didn't exist before. I'm shy and introverted. I relate to that as well. There was also, for people who follow Jay Smooth, I remember somebody had posted a picture that was in like a cafe in New York. And it had some kind of snarky sign to the effect of, there's no Wi-Fi here, pretend it's 1994 and call your mom.
Yeah.
And Jay Smooth commented on it saying, you know, I remember 1994, and actually for a lot of us, it was really lonely. Like, yeah. It wasn't this utopia of everybody being warm and connecting and being in these tight-knit communities. For a lot of people who were maybe introverts, who were maybe weird, who were maybe...
had different interests.
Yeah, like, who maybe, like, had a hard time finding people around them who liked the same things or who they could actually make a genuine connection with. For those kinds of people, it was actually very lonely before social media, and this yeah. was a chance to find your people.
Yeah. And I think that's the one thing for a lot of us natural extroverts or people that have really strong opinions, and we find no problem making, you know, making friends or being out in these streets.
Yeah.
I think me as a critical yeah. person can learn a lot from just recognizing that social media facilitates those who aren't like us to find people that they need too.
Yes.
I never want to be that curmudgeon-y like woman who's just like, why can't we just talk in real time? I think my criticalness comes from, you know, the place where when you are with the person, you're on social media as opposed to being with the person and like enjoying each other's company.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And there is a very real thing. Who was I went to a talk by a community organizer who also teaches at a university and was talking about how his students, a lot of them, they're so good at expressing themselves online and having their online relationships.
Yeah.
But get them in a room together and they're afraid to talk to each other.
Oh,
wow.
And
I do think, yeah, and I do think that that is very real. I mean, yes, some of us were already afraid to talk to people.
Yes, yeah.
But to the extent that now there is this tool where you can just connect online, I mean, that's a great thing in a lot of ways, but sometimes we do need to be pushed out of our comfort zones and we do need to build the in-person face-to-face skills mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah, so I'm yeah. with you on that. And I think it was obviously Amanda Seales who had mentioned something to the effect of, because she was going on about how the way that people engage in her
with her social media, on her Instagram specifically, people going off in the comment sections as if she's not there. She's like, you know, this is my personal.
Yeah.
Like, to her point, she said, social media isn't separate from real life. This is an extension of real life, right?
Yeah. Like, and I think that's the thing, is when you can type something and walk away and not see it land, that does at times inoculate people from actually experiencing the consequences of their actions.
Exactly. And I think sometimes social media creates this distance between us. It's like, well, if you're going to say that to me on social media, just pull up and say it to me in real life. And people won't keep that same energy. That's the truth, right?
Like, yes.
And then it gets to the point where, completely switching gears and not even about how people present themselves on social media, back to the point of using social media as a space to organize.
Yeah.
Using social media as a space to, like, learn about what's happening around us. I was having a conversation with Naya Lewis. She's an artist who lives in Vancouver. And she was talking about how social media can sometimes feel like a space where we all have to be on, sharing all the things, being super engaged, especially as folks who are committed to social justice, for example. And one thing that she said to me recently that really resonated was, we don't always have to be at all the things all the time. We can support the people that we want to support, the activists that we want to support, the movements we want to support, by way of sharing things on social media, by way of financial support, by way of, you know, we don't always have to be out in the streets doing the things all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think social media allows for those of us, for example, those of us who don't have the literal ability to, like, go and march or leave their house or whatever, like, social media allows for us to engage and contribute to our communities in those ways. It's important to realize for myself that when I'm on social media, because I always judge myself and I'm like, am I doing enough? Should I be doing more? I'm on social media sharing this. Is it just enough to share? Because there's so much criticism about slacktivism and how social media contributes to people who just share things and change their profile pictures but don't actually do the work or show up. And I want to challenge that, because I think that there's so many different ways that we can do the work that don't require us to necessarily putting our bodies on the line. And I don't think that it's incumbent upon all of us all the time to put our bodies on the line.
Absolutely.
And social media facilitates not.
Absolutely. And it's a really good point about people, how it's accessible to a lot of people that aren't able to access offline spaces and movements and things like that. And yeah, I'll say so much of my politics and my awareness of what different groups of people or kinds of people experience in the world, most of that I really did learn from listening to people on social media.
Absolutely.
And I've then translated that. I mean, that's such a huge part of what I do as a therapist.
Yeah.
Doing anti-oppressive counseling is using that knowledge to be able to help people put language to things, to be able to understand where someone's coming from and support them. And, you know, everything that I do offline is informed by that. So that work that people are doing by putting all of this online, it does have an impact. It ripples.
Yes. Yeah. And I think taking what we learn from social media and then doing something with it is my biggest takeaway from the way that you use social media. It sounds like for you, it hasn't been a thing where you learn about what you learn about and then you close the book and you close, you're just like, I'm going to continue to live my life as I have always lived it. I think it can be used as a tool to be really transformative of how we see the world, how we see ourselves, how we can even feel validation and sense of belonging. And I guess at this point now, I would love for us to talk about ways that we can engage with social media that can support our personal growth. And you've touched on that a lot with using social media and the friendships and the relationships that you've made through social media as a way to find your people, find people who challenge you, find different diverse perspectives.
Yeah.
On the flip side, when we know that social media isn't serving our needs, or maybe the accounts we're following aren't serving our needs, it's helpful for me to consider when social media is becoming exhausting for me.
Yeah.
Because there's so much, it's like a 24-hour quote unquote news cycle where there's always more information to consume.
Totally.
And so when I'm feeling drained by it, when I'm feeling inadequate because of what I'm consuming, when I'm feeling compelled to connect to it all the time and useless without it, those are moments where if I'm able to catch myself and take a beat and say, okay, is this serving me? Like, being more mindful when we're using social media can actually put us in the right path to go follow the accounts that challenge us and empower us and hold us accountable and allow us to hold others accountable.
Totally. Yeah. That's why it is important to notice when we're getting into that mindless place where it's just a habit, where it's just like without even realizing I'm doing it, my hand is picking up my phone and opening Instagram and scrolling, and right. then I don't even know where the time went. When we're able to engage in it consciously, as in literally just paying attention to what we're doing and staying present,
yeah.
we can notice, is this making me feel bad?
Yeah.
Or is it making me feel good? Or am I learning, or am I just getting drained? And then if we are feeling bad, if we are getting drained, that's when we have the chance to either maybe we need to turn it off. Maybe that's enough for today. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is an account that I need to unfollow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it gives us an opportunity to make choices.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's going to lead me into our Woman of Color of the Week. Yay. By none other, and it is none other than Amanda Seale.
Yes.
But it's important. This is important.
Yes.
And you know I stan Amanda Seale, so shut the fuck up, first of all. But I think one of the reasons that I think she's such a great Woman of Color of the Week for this specific topic is because recently over the summer she actually took like a break from Instagram, and she posts yeah. Instagram stories like every day all the time.
It was
she's
a very
always
noticeable
on it.
Break. Yeah.
Yes, it was very, very noticeable. I think it was like a few weeks, and you could see in the comment sections people were like, "Are you okay? Is everything fine?" And she came back afterwards to let everyone know. She was like, "I have been using social media with y'all in a way that became unsustainable for me." She's like, "My following has grown, and I actually realized I don't have the energy to do and engage with you all the way that I previously had.
Oh.
I know that my needs are changing. I know that for me, I need to do what I do, and you need to respect me in these terms." So she kind of recalibrated her following, essentially.
Wow.
Because folks were pretty thirsty for her to come back. And then when she came back, she was like, "These are the terms and conditions. This is how I'm going to be using it. This is what you're not going to do." And she's been really insightful for me to follow in understanding how she chooses to show up as herself. Because out of a lot of the celebrities that exist, she, for me, is like the one person who seems pretty true to who she is on social media and then in real life, because
yeah.
she's always on it. And you can see her with her no makeup and her hair the way it is and her cats and all that kind of stuff. And perhaps this is a projection, but I see her as a person with a lot of integrity and then having a good sense of like balance where social media exists. And mm-hmm. she's shared a lot of insightful things with respect to, you know, doing our own homework when we're on social media and able to find information that is interesting or validates our opinions, and we think this is something that needs to be shared. It's incumbent upon us to go and research a little bit more to see whether or not that thing that we found is actually founded in like facts and real shit. Because I've definitely shared things where somebody corrected me after the fact and was like, "That wasn't real," or like, "That was a misconstrued thing," or "That was a soundbite." And I think for me, I'm trying to be more accountable about how, if I'm going to be educating people on things, I need to make sure that I know the facts for myself.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Totally.
Yeah. So anyways, Amanda Seale.
Yeah.
Amanda Seale.
Yes.
Nobody is surprised. It's my podcast. Yeah, damn it. We can say this shit, right?
Yes. Yeah. We got to celebrate her as many times as we can.